podcast on all things animation. My name is Andy. I will be your host for tonight. And with me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia.
Hello!
And continuing to join us on this sporadic adventure, Leah.
I'm back, baby.
We are continuing our adventure into all of the DreamWorks franchises. And we have whittled down to our Sweet 16. Am I using that term correctly? I don't watch sports, is it?
Ooh. You were asking the entirely wrong crowd.
I was just about to say, you are absolutely asking the most wrong people for that.
You had to literally, Andy, you had to explain to me how a March Madness bracket works. I don't think I have any more knowledge than you.
My entire knowledge of tournament structure comes from Magic the Gathering. I don't know what to tell you.
Very good.
I'm just like, yeah, this is how this should work.
Good. You can't mulligan a movie.
Oh, you know what? I take it back. I did learn what brackets were when I would go to the Quidditch tournaments that I used to play at, but my team was so bad we always finished dead last, so we never actually got very far in the bracket.
Good.
So clearly we bring a lot of physical teamwork to this podcast.
To this sports podcast.
Super sporty and experienced.
All right, are you all ready to talk about the four-hour cut of the Justice League?
Let's dive.
Yes, absolutely.
I literally just had a moment where I was like, wait, did I not watch the thing that I was supposed to watch?
Nadia, we all said we would watch the Zack Snyder cut of the Justice League.
Oh, darn it, I missed it. I am the least prepared I've ever been.
All right, first matchup is the number one seed, Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, versus our number 16 seed, Abominable.
Well, this was a real easy one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of these movies made me cry.
Wait a minute.
But didn't you say...
Wait a second. If my memory serves correctly...
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to right off the bat put my vote strong and hard into Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Me too.
I'm also going to have to agree with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I still don't agree that Abominable should be in this place.
Would you have still put Wallace and Gromit over the hedge out of curiosity?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. As Leah said, the Abominable is very much definitely like a kind of bland movie as far as originality goes. And so really up against any film that I think creates its own unique story, it's going to lose. Because it didn't put
Abominable is like an oatmeal raisin cookie.
I love oatmeal raisin cookies. What is happening here?
Why do we keep comparing Abominable to food? Because I said it was like spaghetti, and you said it was like an oatmeal raisin cookie.
But it's like...
And I get... Yeah.
I came here for this. I know what I'm going to get. I'm not surprised by anything. And like, at the end of the day, it's fine. But...
That's what I said.
It's not what I really wanted, you know?
Okay, well, I feel personally offended at the tack of oatmeal raisin cookies, but that's for another time. But yeah, I totally agree. Like, just in terms of the care and work that went into creating the story, Wallace and Gromit 100% knocked Abominable way out of the water.
All right, so this was an easy match. Yeah. We can move on to the next one. This one might be a little bit more difficult. It's our number 25 seed, Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, versus our number 24 seed, Trolls.
I just gotta say, I never realized how close these were in their seeding, and I... like, just by the books, looking at the numbers, this should be a really hard one. But, like, my God... How?
Before we get too far into this, I do want to say that since we last recorded, I've listened to the Trolls cover of True Colors about 28 times.
Okay, well...
And I've cried about 27 times.
Okay, that's fair, but also...
One of those didn't quite get
you. Have you ever listened to Get Off of My Back and not felt like a surge of empowerment rage through you so that you feel like you can do anything in the world? And have you also ever listened to it and run around in your living room and pretended to be a horse living his best life? Because that knocks True Colors out of the water anytime.
To answer Leah's question... One of those times it came on while I was going through a Popeye's drive-thru and I did not have the heart to cry in front of this poor Popeye's employee.
I imagine you going up to the window and picking up your chicken and just sobbing, and they're like, I am not paid enough to deal with this, sir. Please take your chicken and leave. Yeah, all right. So, I'm putting my vote down for Spirit.
I'm also voting for Spirit. Well, yeah, this Spirit's such a good film.
This isn't even a question.
I love Trolls for, like, the meme of it, but it's not a good film.
No.
It really is not.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this did not feel like a difficult decision.
Oh, God, no.
No, no. Under no means was this a very difficult decision. This is a pretty easy set match here. I just wanted to scare you for a moment. So for the next matchup, we have our number 4 seed, Shrek, versus our number 13 seed, Puss in Boots.
I just gotta say, for someone who gets really stressed out making decisions, these early seeds are so comforting because I'm like, there's not even a question, guys. Like, this is so, it's so easy, and I feel so comforted that I'm making the right call. So good. My vote goes for Shrek.
All right, all I have to say about this is in the Shrek musical, they have this whole scene with the mirror. You know how, like, in the movie, the mirror is like, oh, hey, I have to warn you about Fiona, she does this thing, and like they like set it aside. They have this whole song that like goes through Fiona's whole backstory from like childhood to adulthood, and it's like told as though it were the mirror presenting it to the audience. But it literally is followed after the scene where they have that whole exchange where he's like, no, I have to warn you. And it's like, you have time to give me this entire thing, but never once mention the whole ogre thing.
Interesting.
So he doesn't mention that she's an ogre. He just mentions...
No, it's the mirror, and then it goes into the mirror, and it's just Fiona singing as a child. Like, it's a child actor playing Fiona.
Oh, yeah, and it like, goes all into her feeling stuck in the castle and, like, wanting to be set free, but, right? Is that the one? And it goes through different ages where she, like, gets older and in each... Yeah. And so you get, like, young Fiona and teenage Fiona, and then you get to adult Fiona, and the whole point is, like, oh, man, I'm so stuck in this tower, but not, like, hey, I have this curse that is horrifying and changes my body against my will. Whatever, man, I'm in this tower, though, and that's the priority here.
Yeah, okay, so what you're saying is that the Shrek musical is the best of all time.
Yep.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I'm saying.
The pinnacle...
Watch the Shrek musical.
Not just the pinnacle of costume art, but, like, storytelling, man. Yep, it just gets right in there.
It's just so good.
Yeah, I think it really takes a good source text and really adds some important substance to it, you know? It just it takes the Shrek movie and then does more.
The whole premise of Shrek is that it's not your average Disney musical.
Oh no.
I don't understand why we needed to make it that.
That's such a good point. Such a good point.
Oh. Like, they literally takes like the defining aspect of Shrek and just rips it out.
Sad.
Anyway, I'm voting Shrek on this one.
Yes, same.
Yep, same.
All right, time for the toughest one yet.
You're not wrong, man. Not wrong.
It is our number 5 seed, How to Train Your Dragon 2, versus our number 12 seed, Captain Underpants, the first Captain Underpants.
Okay, so now I'm mad that we haven't had a second Captain Underpants, because this one specifies that it's the first, and I really enjoyed it. So where's my second movie?
Okay, that's actually something that I was thinking when I was initially watching it, is I was like, that is a bold move to name your movie the first epic movie, because if you don't get a sequel, that's going to be real awkward.
Yeah. And I also, like, I'm pretty sure it did, I mean, it is number 12, so it did well in terms of its, like, critical reception.
Yeah, I looked it up and they actually are making a second one. I think it's going to come out next
year.
That makes sense. Guys, this was a relatively recent film, too.
Guys, can we all go
see
it in theaters when that's allowed again?
No. I did not like this movie. I don't want to see the second one.
I'll see this in theaters with you.
Yeah, you guys can see it together, and I'll go watch a good movie.
Wow.
But only if it has such a banging Weird Al track like this one does.
Oh, that is... Yes. I gotta say, usually when I'm done watching a movie, I feel the way I feel about it, but I finished watching this movie and I felt good about it. And then the Weird Al song came on and I was like, I instantly like this movie, like, quite a bit more than I did at the end, simply because of the song choice during the credits.
No, that song is, like, just genuinely good on its own.
I'm gonna add it to a playlist. I want that to randomly come up.
That is a good song.
It is a good song with a good message.
And on the song alone, I think it beats out How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Guys, I drank water and it went down the wrong tube!
Yeah, get my point in while Nadia can't rebuttal me.
Oh my god! I'm so sorry. Alright.
You good?
I like actually kind of am a little bit torn with this one, but I ultimately did go with How to Train Your Dragon 2. I liked it so much more the second time watching it, and I think that it is a really cohesive film, and I think that it builds really beautifully off of the first one. So
as much as I joked around about it, I do genuinely vote for Captain Underpants here.
Oh my god, I love you.
I think How to Train Your Dragon 2, at least for me, and I did mention this in our last episode, but I think that this relies on How to Train Your Dragon 3 so much to be a good film, and vice versa with those two. Like, if you were to put How to Train Your Dragon 2 and 3 as a package in front of me, I would be all in on the How to Train Your Dragon sequels. But on its own, I just don't think it holds up nearly enough, whereas like Captain Underpants is this like wholesome, just amazing story about two young boys who love each other very much.
Okay, can I please change my vote, because I picked How to Train Your Dragon because I was nervous about the shame. I'm the only one that picked. I was really nervous, but I really do love Captain Underpants. Please dear god,
please don't ever be afraid of picking a movie that we don't necessarily agree on.
Dragon, like, the whole franchise is seen as being so good that, like, I felt initially, I was like, well, it probably should win, but then you know what, screw that, because there are a whole bunch of things here that I disagree on. And also, yeah, and I think part of it was that I really was disappointed, like, the first time I saw How to Train Your Dragon in theater, so watching it the second time, I liked it so much more that I was like, oh, my experience was so much better. But also, I agree, like, I've seen all of the movies, and the first one is the only one I reliably come back to rewatch. Like, I don't really watch the second or third, and if I were to watch them all together, like, then I would watch the other ones, but I don't ever like come back to just the second or just the third. Like, it's always the first, and then the other ones are like an afterthought of like, oh, I might rewatch them if I want to finish the series.
Yeah, and I think my thing specifically with the second one, and why I was initially so high on it, whereas I'm not nearly as high on it now as I was prior, was that I feel like my viewing of it initially was tainted because I had seen the third one first. Mm-hmm. I had the context of the third one, and I had all of the plot points, and I knew where this world was going, that the world building really blew me away, and the storytelling really blew me away with how the trilogy as a whole is structured. But I think on its own, it's not nearly as strong a film, and I don't think I would be nearly as high on it if I had seen it first and then waited years to see the third.
Which is maybe why I did like it more the second time, because I had the whole trilogy in context, whereas the first time I obviously didn't. I hadn't thought about it like that before, but that might have been the reason why I enjoyed it.
Anyway, Leah, would you like to try to sway one of our minds?
Yes. I obviously picked How to Train Your Dragon 2 because I really did not like Captain Underpants, which I have talked about very extensively of like, yeah, I'm obviously not the person that this movie is made. So I know I just said that I thought Captain Underpants was a bad movie, and I don't actually think it's a bad movie. I just don't think that it has the same level of care and passion put into it as How to Train Your Dragon.
Really?
Too.
Huh.
And I don't think that it's as memorable either. So, you know, when you think about DreamWorks films, the Kung Fu Panda trilogy and the How to Train Your Dragon trilogy are the two that really come up for me when I think of DreamWorks, and I think of really good DreamWorks films. And I just found that Captain Underpants hasn't stuck in my brain in the same way. And I don't know, it didn't hit anything for me. It didn't do anything for me. When How to Train Your Dragon 2, I think, yeah, it has some problems, but I think if you're just comparing it as a movie, just purely as a movie, not even contextualizing it within the trilogy, just kind of thinking about it as an independent movie, it just holds up better than Captain Underpants does. And I think at least I would revisit How to Train Your Dragon 2. And obviously you guys can have different opinions, but that's
why we're having this podcast. Exactly. If we all sat down and were like, we have the same opinions, this would not be an interesting conversation. But I think to touch on the whole love and care for the story, having read the Captain Underpants books growing up, a lot of the things that I think that you are perceiving as issues with the story are very much in line with that tone and with those books. And I think that like that does show a lot of care and attention to detail to the story that they're telling and the characters that they're presenting.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I never read the books, so yeah. I don't know.
I absolutely understand. You have not read the books. You are not of this demographic. This is not a movie for you. And that's an absolutely fair position to have.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a however that you're about to say.
Well,
No, that is the end of you. Oh, you okay. Have your opinion. I respect you and your opinion. That's it. I love you.
Yay. Wow. What a beautiful show of how to disagree with respect. Just to be in the middle, because like Leah, I never read the books, but like Andy, I really loved the movie. And I think part of what really made me love it when I started watching it was that I did feel the care that was put into it. Like I initially wasn't going to watch it because I expected it to just be like a stupid, you know, cash grab of like, oh, here's this big franchise that's already been established within the books and has a following. So we're just going to make a shitty movie or make a bad movie of that franchise to pull in money. And then when I started actually watching the movie, I saw sort of the care that they had put into like crafting the humor that was part of the film beyond just the potty jokes, like the physical comedy, the situational comedy, like the relationship between the characters, the funny little flashback scenes where they do it in like the book style or when they have the puppets, like all of the stuff I felt was made with so much, like it was created to be a legitimately good movie and not just, oh, well, this will be an easy one. There's already a book. We'll just adapt it. And that made me pay more attention to it as I was watching. So I don't know. Basically, I felt the care that they put into it. And it's also, they're so different. Like How to Train Your Dragon is a very different genre. So in terms of looking at the scope of the world, it's very different than the scope of the world of Captain Underpants. But I do agree with Annie that if you're looking at it just as an isolated film in terms of like the cohesion of story, it standing alone well, it being crafted with intent and consistency and like solid plot and character. I really have to pee again and also drink a butt ton of water because apparently I'm still coughing. So I'm gonna pop off really quick, but I'll be back.
Okay. Well, Leah, now you know how I feel when we picked Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron over Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah.
I'm back, baby.
Let me know when I can make my great rebuttal to that.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I guess what I would say against your point, Nadia, and this is like a genuine question that I want to ask is, when you reflected back, when you were watching all these movies, and you reflected back at the end or before recording or whenever you did whatever reflection back, which movie stuck in your head more?
Out of just those two?
Mm-hmm.
Captain Underpants.
Okay.
And I think part of it is because it did surprise me so much in terms of its quality. Like when I first watched it, I was so impressed with it. And then when I came back and watched it a second time, it held up. Whereas I have more of a fluctuating relationship with How to Train Your Dragon 2. Like when I saw it in theaters, I left being unimpressed. And when I saw it a second time, I was more impressed than I was the first time, which I think, again, like the context in which you watch the films really changes the way you view them. So having liked it more the second time, I felt like I was more impressed with it just because I went in with lower expectations, if that makes sense.
Being an individual who Nadia has already yelled at for liking How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yeah.
There's definitely some aspect of like personal attachments and personal opinions.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think that also, I think part of it for me is that the first How to Train Your Dragon felt so original in its storytelling and its, again, I talk about this a lot, but the fact that it didn't really have a villain and its focus on these relationships, these growing relationships between like a father and his son and all of this stuff that, and just, you know, the context in the world, like, you know, being in, with the Vikings and the dragons, like it just felt so new and fresh. And the second one did build upon that and it did build the world, but it also fell into that trap of like the second and the third still have that really classic villain and the villains are kind of different, but they're also kind of the same in both movies. And I felt like some of that originality in terms of the freshness of the movie was lost for me in the second and the third because they fell back into some common tropes that for me felt sort of overdone and easy. The villains were easy.
But I would say that the first one had a villain as well. Like that was one of my biggest criticisms with it when we were talking about it last time, is that the first one had such a wonderful creative story in the beginning and then it just turned into big bad dragon, we must defeat big bad dragon towards the end.
Yeah, but I think the dragon is less of a villain and more of like an obstacle, if that makes sense, because he's not an actual fleshed out character. So like, yes, technically he's a villain. Like, the dragon isn't actively working against the protagonist for a specific reason. He's just being a dragon.
So then why did the villain trope not bother you in Captain Under?
Because I expected it going in. I wasn't necessarily expecting a fully unique story. I think what I felt was unique about Captain Underpants was the relationships and the friendships and then the humor that went beyond the potty humor.
But it's also having a primary antagonist is not necessarily a knock against a film.
No, I think I just get frustrated in How to Train Your Dragon because the first one and the second one feel so similar to me, and they also did such a beautiful job of crafting a first one without it. So then to fall back into it made me angrier than going into a film and just having that be the established norm in the beginning, like with Captain Underpants.
I have a very similar issue with How to Train Your Dragon 2, but it's more, it feels like the threads that hold together the trilogy are really almost entirely the latter two films. The second and third film specifically feel so disconnected from the first one in both tone and actual world that it's hard for me to take either one of those on its own and praise it as a good film. If you had mashed together How to Train Your Dragon 2 and 3 into this 4-hour long spectacle with like an intermission in the middle, I would 100% be picking How to Train Your Dragon to the Hidden World over Captain Underpants here.
Yeah. Also, Leah, just to agree with you, I do have the same issues that you do with the big bad dragon fight at the end, and I do think that it does fall into some more classic sort of like, you know, big fighty tropes, but because it is such a slimmer segment of the first film, it bothers me less than the second and third, where like the interactions with the villains take up the majority of the energy of the other characters.
Sure. No, I mean, I agree that in How to Train Your Dragon 2, I think the villain is an issue. And the third, it's pretty much the same villain as the second one, just bigger and worser. No, like, I agree with your criticisms of How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I don't necessarily think that this is going to be a situation where either of us is going to convince the other one that we're correct.
Yeah, like, that's absolutely
fair. I don't see a world in which I'm ever going to choose Captain Underpants over something else. And that's...
Yeah, which is totally fine. And it's a very stylized film, so I feel like it also comes down to, is that your style?
Yeah, well, that was right? My issue like, with it. Like, that was one of the big issues that I had with it, is that I didn't like the animation, I didn't like the story, I didn't like most things about it.
Yeah, I think the issue here is like you had to sit down and you were forced to watch this film.
Yeah,
whereas like if you are someone who is just looking for a movie to watch and the name Captain Underpants doesn't immediately turn you off, you're probably going to enjoy the film.
Exactly. And I think that's the issue, is that I think that the title does a really good job of sort of weeding the people out that wouldn't automatically like this film. And so, you know, like you said, if you see a film that's called Captain Underpants and you say, oh, I don't think that that's what I want to watch, then it does a great job of filtering those people out automatically.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Agreed.
I definitely respect picking How to Train Your Dragon 2 here. They're both good films, and as many knocks as I can give against How to Train Your Dragon 2, it's still a very good film.
Oh, yeah. I still like it. I just have a very weird, special place in my heart for Captain Underpants, especially given the fact that I did not read any of the books as a kid.
Sure, yeah.
But yes, Nadia, if you feel you have an unpopular opinion, please voice it.
Okay, good.
Unless that unpopular opinion is to like Monsters vs. Aliens, and then don't voice it. Unless
it's specifically Monsters vs. Aliens over Shrek 2. That's unacceptable. How dare you?
I will never, ever, ever make that mistake again.
No, you enjoy what you enjoy, and I will never judge you for it.
Well, you'll probably judge me for it.
All right, am I going to judge you for this next one? Is our number 2 seed Chicken Run versus our number 18 seed Mega Run. It's Mega Run.
Chicken Mind and Mega Run.
Those are both titles that could just be describing Chicken Run. Is Chicken Mind and Mega Run?
Yeah. it literally could have just been called Mega Run.
Why is it called Chicken Run? They're trying to fly.
That is actually such a good point.
Oh my god, why is it called Chicken Fly?
Because Chicken Fly is objectively a bad title for something.
It's a horrible name. I mean, Chicken Run kind of is too, if you think about it, like outside of the context of knowing it's a movie.
That's true.
Like if someone came up to you and was like, I want to watch Wombat Run, you'd be like, what are you talking about?
I came here for Penguin Slide. Actually, no, that would be great.
I actually do like that one.
So, yeah, I picked Megamind.
100% agreed.
Yeah, no, I think this is an easy Megamind. I don't really think we need to. We have had our conversation on Chicken Run enough.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, I think the only reason why it progressed was because it was up against Madagascar 1, which just
I think could beat out some of the other films here. I would definitely choose Chicken Run over Turbo.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chicken Run definitely has its merits. I think that there are parts of it that I don't want to say appreciate, but like respect in terms of creative decisions.
Yeah, that's fair.
But at the end of the day, for me, Megamind is just, it is an S-tier movie. It is so good and so creative and so funny and so interesting that Chicken Run doesn't really stand a chance.
Yep, I agree.
So did we all vote Megamind?
Yep.
It sounds like we did.
Yep. I would have been very surprised sudden upset if Andy had gone to Chicken Run, given our last conversation. I would have been like, wow, that is a 180. My God.
It's like, yeah, no, I just really hate Megamind, and Chicken Run's so good. Anyway, here's where I think things get interesting.
Oh, yeah, this is where it gets tough.
Our number 7 seed, Shrek 2, versus our number 10 seed, Kung Fu Panda 3. Leah, what are your thoughts on these two films?
I guess I'll start off saying I pick Kung Fu Panda 3. I think Kung Fu Panda 3 is actually the weakest of the Kung Fu Panda movies, but I thought it fit really well in the trilogy, and I thought it was unpredictable. You know, there was a certain point when I sort of said, like, okay, well, I think I know what's going to happen in this. And it actually didn't happen, which I'm very pleased with. And I think Kung Fu Panda 3 is just overall a very strong movie in terms of characters and setting and story. And I mean, Shrek 2 is also really good, and I think it was a great sequel to the first one. It was a great follow-up. I really, really liked how the whole Shrek trilogy, but this one especially, showed really well how Shrek and Fiona's relationship has really evolved. And that's actually something that I really appreciated in all of the movies, especially as somebody who is in a very long-term relationship. It was really cool to see their relationship and their relationship to each other and the way that they communicate evolve throughout the movies. I think Shrek 2 is also a very strong movie, but ultimately I picked Kung Fu Panda 3.
Nadia?
I still don't really know. I had a really hard time with this one. I hadn't seen Kung Fu Panda 2 or 3 for like a super duper long time when I rewatched them for the bracket, and I watched them one after another, and I do gotta say that I just forgot which one Kung Fu Panda 3 was and had to Google it to remind myself. So I feel like that kind of tainted my thought process, because I was like, crap, I can't remember which one the third one is. So like, how much should I vote for it if I didn't remember what had happened in it?
Mm-hmm.
But I've also seen Shrek 2 more, so like my memory is probably stronger just because I have more of a context for that one. But I also kind of hadn't seen it more, because I think I saw it once when it came out, and then I genuinely, like, I was looking through the bracket before we started to record, and I got to this one and I was like, crap, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'll have to listen to what other people have to say, because both of these franchises for me do the thing that you were talking about, Leah, where like they flow from the first to the second to the third, and then with Shrek, you know, the fourth, with this momentum of growth that like really fits and makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not just a second movie, it is truly a continuation of the message that we got to conclude with the first one in Shrek and Fiona. It specifically focuses on their relationship, and I think with Kung Fu Panda it really focuses more on like Po's relationship with himself. But like each film does a fantastic job of building off of the message of the first and then continuing forward with it in a new way that makes a lot of sense and helps grow a deeper understanding of this idea of either finding love with someone else or finding love within yourself. And I'm just rambling on because I genuinely don't know which one I would pick, and I'm kind of waiting to hear what Andy's got to say, because I like these ones are really, really close for me.
Okay, I can give you my opinion here. First off, I love both of these films. As mentioned, I do agree that Kung Fu Panda is the weakest of the Kung Fu Panda trilogy, but the Kung Fu Panda trilogy is one of the best that DreamWorks has put out. And I think the first two Shreks are honestly some of the best films to have come out. And honestly, like, I've put, and I know I mentioned this in the episode that we did, but I definitely put the fourth Shrek somewhere up there with the first. But neither of those are going to beat out Shrek 2 in my mind. I think of the Shrek, Shrek 2 is easily the best. And when it comes down to this, it's the best Shrek film versus the worst Kung Fu Panda film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I think Shrek 2 just has a much solidly told story, a much more compelling list of characters, and a really banging soundtrack and score.
That's yeah, I Need a true. Hero slaps so hard. It's not even...
Oh, so it's tough. It is tough for me, but I do think that this is a Shrek 2 win.
Okay. I am convinced by that. I think I'm going to go with my gut of, like, the telling experience of not remembering anything that happened in Kung Fu Panda 3 versus, like, actually having a recollection of Shrek 2 that is pretty, like, whole, as, for me, pointing to that being a more, like, cohesive film in my eyes, if that makes sense.
I definitely agree with a lot of what you said, Andy, and I think these movies both fell sort of equally for me, so I feel like either one is a good choice. It's, you know, there's not a wrong answer here, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a wrong answer for any of these.
No, of course not.
Except for Monsters vs. Aliens versus Shrek 2.
Oh, no.
That's the only one of these with a wrong answer.
Yeah, don't worry, guys. I took one for the team. I have now been the only one to have a wrong opinion, and from now on, it's clear sailing, folks.
You know, I think actually, interestingly, Nadia, you mentioned not remembering Kung Fu Panda 3, and I think I actually weirdly had the opposite thing that you did, is I only remember a little bit of what happened in Shrek 2, and I remember a lot more about what happened in Kung Fu Panda 3, but maybe that was only because it felt like not as good as the other ones, and so maybe I just remembered it.
Yeah.
Because it didn't quite fit right, or maybe it's because I saw Kung Fu Panda 3 more recently than I saw Shrek 2, but...
Yeah, yeah, again, I feel like opinions are so tainted by just, like, the situation and the context in which you watch the film that it's so hard, I mean, without, like, I guess, like, a legitimate degree where you've, like, learned to, like, analyze to the extent where you can separate yourself. But even in, like, literature analysis, you know, everything is still rooted in your experience of that piece. Mm-hmm. And you can never fully remove your context from the thing that you're viewing, which is what makes this stuff so great, right? Like, you learn about yourself as you talk about this piece because you have to unpack the reason why you feel a certain way and, like, the context in which you are viewing it and how that alters your experience with whatever you're seeing. So, I don't know. That's what makes it cool and fun.
Mm-hmm. If these had objectively correct answers, this wouldn't be good content. We'd just be sitting here, like, putting numbers on a paper.
Like a bunch of nerds.
And as we've learned, the numbers that we do have are wrong in many ways, right?
Or, like, just outdated. Compiled. Like, horribly exactly. Outdated.
Exactly, yeah.
So is the final consensus for this Shrek 2?
I believe that is the consensus. Okay. From my understanding, it is a 2-1 on Shrek 2.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so our next matchup, our number 3 seed, How to Train Your Dragon, versus our number 14 seed, The Prince of Egypt.
Oh, this is another really hard one.
All right, would you like to lead on our thoughts on the movies?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it is because you asked.
Okay, so this one is super hard for me. And again, this is, like, super, super rooted in just my own, like, context. But I feel like I might walk myself back on this, but my gut is to choose How to Train Your Dragon. I feel so, because, like, The Prince of Egypt, again, similar to Spirit, it's just this powerhouse of a film. Like, it is just beautifully crafted, and the animation is unbelievable, and the soundtrack is incredibly emotional and charged, and it drives the story in such a beautiful way, and the two work together in an unbelievably fantastic, like, tandem. And it's also, like, you know, a Jewish story, which we don't get a whole lot of in the media. It makes me happy as somebody who, like, you know, didn't get a whole lot of Jewish representation growing up. But I also am, like, weird about religion, and I've kind of talked about this before, but I, like, don't have a very... I have a very like fraught relationship with the idea of religion as a whole. And my experience, my personal experience with Judaism has been like very based in culture and community and like carrying on the legacy of my grandfather, who was a Holocaust survivor, and like understanding the importance of tradition. But it's been like very separated for me in terms of any type of relationship with like God, I guess, as somebody who's like hella atheist. So I feel weird when I watch things that are particularly religious. And it's like, again, this is super personal, but like part of it makes me uncomfortable when like people talk about God as a being that like actually exists and holds sway within a story. And it like that discomfort, and again, it has nothing to do with the craft of the film, because the craft of the film is just like, I really think it is flawless, but it's like a weird like thing within myself that like affected my experience viewing the movie. So I don't know, that was a whole rumble tumble of a thing that doesn't actually have a point, but just to give some context of like, I will revisit How to Train Your Dragon very frequently, and I revisit The Prince of Egypt far less, but I also think it's like beautifully done. But How to Train Your Dragon also holds this like super special place in my heart in terms of a film that I really love and in terms of a message that I find really important. And I also think it is also beautifully done, like the soundtrack is phenomenal. I think the story really does reach out to do something original. And I guess if we're going back to my thing of like finding value in originality, The Prince of Egypt is like as far from being an original piece as you can get. But I also think it does original stuff with the music, and like the filming is unbelievable. And I don't know, I'm just like walking myself around. Literally my only hang up with The Prince of Egypt is that it talks about God, and that makes me uncomfortable. And it's like solely personal. So I don't know, guys.
That's absolutely fair. I think with The Prince of Egypt specifically, I have this weird relationship with this film, where it's like, it's stunningly beautiful. And the soundtrack is amazing. The score is haunting at times. I think that this film is honestly a piece of art. But also, I grew up raised Catholic and went to Sunday school, and this film had been played on a repeat for me in that setting so many times that it's partially ruined to me. Especially when I'm being told to write essays on it and how it relates to the actual like scripture. So I absolutely understand where you're coming from in terms of like having this troubling relationship with it because of its relation to God and religion in general. But having revisited it after at least a decade of not having actually seen it, I never at any point felt like I was being preached at or talked down to. It acknowledged that within the context of the film, these gods do exist, but it never tries to get you, the viewer, to buy it as something in your personal life.
Well, I think it only acknowledges that God with a capital G exists, because it kind of actively acknowledges that the Egyptian gods are fake, being that the two sort of priests, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word, but the two that are sort of the spokespeople for God,
the advisors, the or whatever they are,
yeah, they're like incredibly goofy, they're the comic relief, you see them doing fake tricks. So I think it's pretty clear on the fact that those gods are not supposed to exist within this context, and there is really the only,
they're the Timon and Pumbaa but evil.
Yeah, so I don't think you're supposed to see multiple gods existing within this world.
Yes, but it never tries to push that agenda on the viewer, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Like, it's not like this Veggie Tales, like, you need to go out and read the Bible. It's...
Yeah, you're right. And also, like, there are other things that are prioritized over God. Like, it does put an immense amount of energy into crafting characters and also crafting music, and not just the animation, but like the cinematography. See, I feel like everything that I'm saying makes me feel like I should pick The Prince of Egypt. But like, at the end of the day, when I'm looking for a movie to watch that makes me feel happy, but again, like, happiness, a film can be good without, again, like Spirit. I'm probably not going to watch Spirit again for like 15 years, but I also think it is a fantastic film. So like, how do I...
Yeah, and I think these both of these films are very good. To talk on How to Train Your Dragon, I think How to Train Your Dragon is an amazing film with an amazing soundtrack, beautiful landscapes. You get to see this world from the sky, and it's just this beautiful landmass. And the stories that are being told, the characters that live in this world are just amazingly beautiful. Like, I love every aspect of the world building in How to Train Your Dragon, and I think How to Train Your Dragon is an amazingly told story for what DreamWorks generally puts out. But I don't think it quite breaks that ceiling of being a true piece of art like The Prince of Egypt does.
So I like that you say that, Andy, because that was exactly my reasoning as well. Is I think that How to Train Your Dragon is a great movie. I think it is a modern classic. I think everybody should watch it. You know, I have my criticisms that I mentioned in the last episode, but I think like...
And earlier this episode.
And yeah, and earlier this episode.
And literally like 20 minutes ago.
But I think How to Train Your Dragon is amazing. I think it's really good. And I think picking between these two movies does whichever movie we don't pick a disservice, because both of them are so good. Having said that, like you said, Andy, Prince of Egypt is not just a movie. I think it is a work of art in every sense of the word and in every aspect. And I guess my experience, I'll talk kind of about my experience with Prince of Egypt because you guys both did, but I grew up completely non-religious. My parents aren't religious. I'm not religious. And we don't go to church and we don't do any of that stuff. However, we did celebrate Passover, doing a Passover Seder with our family friends growing up. And so pretty much every year since I was born all the way through high school, I celebrated Passover every year and did a Seder every year. And every year after the Seder, we would watch this movie. And I think as a kid, I appreciated it for sort of the more simplistic values of it, because it was able to help me contextualize what I had just been reading about at the Seder. And the Seder that we did too was sort of a more simplified version, because it was me and a bunch of other kids around my age. And so we didn't do the kind of the full thing, but we did a simplified version of it. And we talked a little bit about the story. And so it was interesting to see the story brought into a visual medium. And then I haven't seen it for many years since then, and so coming back to it, I was really, really, really blown away by it. And I think that the visuals are really, really, really stunning and are much, much better than they have any right to be. And the characters are good and the music is amazing. I was actually listening to the soundtrack this morning while making breakfast, and I listen to it actually very frequently because it's extremely good. And I think sort of what you were saying, Andy, is that when you don't have a cultural or religious relationship to what's happening in the film, it's a little bit easier to contextualize it in terms of fiction, or I guess in terms of a movie. Because I don't want to say that it's fiction, because for some people it is very real and very much not fiction.
Well,
but I think
to touch on that real quick, none of us are going to say that this is not true.
Yeah.
But what we will touch on is this movie specifically, the DreamWorks adaptation of this film, is not how any of this occurred.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the one to say that none of this is true. I stand by
I'm sure historically there was a Moses, right? Like, whether or not the Bible or this DreamWorks adaptation or historical context, all of whichever one is being told to you is true, is that's not the question we're having here. This movie specifically did not occur the way that it is depicted in this movie.
Yeah, and we didn't come here to debate religion, because I feel like that's a very, very slippery slope that we could go down. And we are here to talk about this movie. But I think having it not be a part of my religion allowed me to view this movie in a different way, is kind of what I'm trying to say.
No, I think that's super fair.
Yeah, and so I think if I did grow up very religiously Jewish, and I did grow up reading this story, I think that I would view this movie differently. But from my perspective, I think that this movie is absolutely a work of art, and there were a few scenes in it that made me tear up.
Oh yeah, I literally bawled throughout the entire...
Yeah, I honestly did not like this film growing up. I think having removed myself from my religious background is what really gave me the appreciation for this film.
Okay, I have a quick question, because both of you keep talking about how, like, The Prince of Egypt is this like powerhouse work of art, and I completely agree, and I like felt the same way about Spirit, even though it was like a difficult movie to watch emotionally, but I'm wondering where that line falls that makes How to Train Your Dragon not be describable that way, because like I don't know, I like don't know how to phrase it, but there are moments within that film too where like the soundtrack and the cinematography align, when they're doing the scenes in the air, when they're like really unpacking what is happening with Hiccup emotionally, that are done in this unbelievably intentional and like wholly crafted perfect way. So what moves this film away for you from being considered sort of this iconic work of art and just seen as a movie? I don't know if that makes sense, but...
I think for me, it's the reliance on, like, the comic relief. Where, like, both films do have their comic reliefs. It's very much like, in How to Train Your Dragon, you get breaths of art with story beats in the middle. And comedy, 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 beautiful work, comedy, comedy, comedy. Whereas The Prince of Egypt is more work of art, work of art, work of art. We're going to try to make you laugh. Work of art, work of art, work of art, work of art.
So can something not be a work of art if it's funny?
Art is subjective, and you can absolutely have funny works of art, but I think it's more How to Train Your Dragon is a beautiful film. Like, it follows the film structure much more tightly, whereas it's much more, this is the plot, we're going to be going through this. Whereas, like, the actual plot of The Prince of Egypt, most of it is covered in a montage.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that this, I mean, obviously this is a debate that people have been having for a very long time, is...
Yeah, we're not going to solve this tonight.
Can things like movies and video games be art? And so I don't think we're going to solve this now. But for me, I guess there were two things that kind of pushed it into the art category, in my opinion. The first being that I think that when you look at a piece of sort of traditional art, such as a painting, it's something that you're experiencing that provides you with material that you are there to interpret and derive meaning and emotion from. And I think that The Prince of Egypt did that a little bit more for me than How to Train Your Dragon, because I think How to Train Your Dragon was a little bit more straightforward about what it was trying to tell you. And I think that The Prince of Egypt provided you with visuals and story and songs and dialogue that gave you an experience that left you with the ability to interpret what you felt like you needed to interpret from that. And so I think some of the scenes tell you very kind of specifically, like, okay, well, you should probably feel sad at this scene, you should probably feel happy at this scene, but there was so much trust in the audience to interpret it themselves in a way that they wanted to. And when we're having this discussion, I just think of the scene after Moses discovers his background, and he goes to, well, he like walks through his like his the halls, and he sees all of those paintings of history, and he has this torch, and it's lighting this dark hall, and then he sees these paintings, and his torch is illuminating what's happening, and it's, you know, it's coming, he's coming to realize it, and then he just starts breaking down, and he's sobbing, and he is kind of knelt in front of this wall, and it zooms out, and it's dark with his torch illuminating, and there's these huge shadows on the walls, and you see the picture, and it's this giant, giant, giant wall with Moses very, very tiny at the bottom, and it's very, 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 very quiet. And that scene for me really sort of solidified it in my brain as this is art, because it wasn't saying like, oh man, look at Moses, how sad he is because of, you know, his thousands of people died. It was saying, feel and experience the weight of this realization with him, and see, like, experience this with him, and interpret this how you will. And I think that, like Andy says, How to Train Your Dragon has moments of that, specifically in the when Toothless and Hiccup are flying together for the first time. But I think that that's handing you a little bit more of what you are quote-unquote supposed to be feeling in that scene.
That's pretty fair. I think also in that scene that you're talking about, and correct me if I'm misremembering it, but the mural that the light is cast against is the one of all of the suns being cast into the water.
It
and
is.
Moses at the bottom follows the pattern of the suns.
Yep, exactly.
So he is, yeah, okay. So he's a part of the, yeah, no, yeah, you guys have convinced me.
Yeah.
I will also say that I think in terms of moving beyond the expectations of visuals, The Prince of Egypt does that more too.
Yeah.
Like, there were just normal scenes where characters were talking where I was unbelievably impressed in the way that it was blocked and the way that it was crafted and like the meaning that was derived from the background and the shadows and just like the colors that characters were represented with. That was so unbelievably like well thought out. Mm-hmm. And I guess, and correct me if this is not what you were saying, but but with How to Train Your Dragon, that scene is kind of talked to, the scene where they're flying is talked to quite a bit as being this, like, it, like, that is the moment for me with the movie, and I think a lot of people also experience that as being, like, the moment of, like, emotion and of connectedness and of, like, awe and inspiration, but it's more of a moment within a larger film, whereas with The Prince of Egypt, the entire film kind of carries that weight.
Yeah.
Is that...
Yeah, and the Prince of Egypt really does a great job of letting you sit with the weight of moments. So there's some genuinely really heavy stuff that happens in Prince of Egypt, and they sort of let you just sit almost uncomfortably with it. Like, you're like, okay, please move to the next scene. This is really sad. But they just sort of let it, the weight sit there. And I feel like that is such a great way of portraying emotion. Especially kind of more heavy emotions.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that was one of the strengths with How to Train Your Dragon is that it gave you these, and we talked about this before, it gave you these sort of breaths mm-hmm. where, like, you weren't just focused on plot, but you were, like, sitting within a moment or within an experience or within a decision, and The Prince of Egypt also does that, but to a greater extent.
Yeah, and I mean, The Prince of Egypt gives you also pause. Just has a heavier storyline, too, which I think...
Yeah.
You know, it's...
You mean slavery and genocide. Yeah.
It's pretty heavy stuff.
I think we definitely have a lot more to say about The Prince of Egypt. I think we should probably save some of this for later rounds.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
But I in my opinion, I think Prince of Egypt is a wonderful piece of art. So I picked that one.
Cool. I will succumb to that. Y'all have laid out a very convincing series of points.
So The Prince of Egypt moves on. I'm a little nervous about this next one. Going into our final match for this March Madness bracket of round two of the round two of the thing of our Sweet 16 or whatever that one's called is our 27 seed Penguins of Madagascar versus our number 11 seed Kung Fu Panda 2. And I just want to say, if Penguins of Madagascar somehow wins this round, I'm going to throw a tantrum and I don't understand what's happening.
Well, do you want to go first then, Andy?
Kung Fu Panda 2, best Kung Fu Panda film, best Kung Fu Panda, easily one of the best trilogy of the Dream, easily one of the best franchises of the DreamWorks pantheon. While I will put Penguins of Madagascar as easily the best Madagascar film, there's not much competition there. I love Penguins of Madagascar as a film. The humor gets me, the heart and the story do make me feel things. But Kung Fu Panda 2 is literally the accumulation of Po's journey and just him learning to be who he is and come to terms with his past. And it is beautiful in literally every way. The humor is just so good. And it's like that joke that Nadia raved on about in Monsters vs. Aliens, where you have a villain who's just, like, giving this evil monologue and the characters don't really hear him. They do that in this film. And it works. And it works so well. This is a bumbling villain whose bumblingness makes it funny, but you still get that intimidation factor from them. You still understand why they are the antagonist. And Kung Fu Panda 2 is just an amazing film. And Penguins of Madagascar, while still a good film, I do not feel can stand up to it. Leah?
I felt very conflicted about this because I agree. I think Kung Fu Panda 2 is absolutely the best Kung Fu Panda. And I think Madagascar is not just the best, not Madagascar. Wow. Penguins of Madagascar. Yeah, is one of the best of the Madagascar series, and it is so, it's so full of heart, and it is so funny and in, like, lovely and amazing and hilarious. Like, I, in my notes, I wrote down about 10 different instances where this movie made me actually just laugh out loud. And Kung Fu Panda 2 is also just wonderful and full of love and action and comedy and just so sweet. I don't know. I have a hard time picking. And
do you want me to bumble on for a little bit before you make a final decision?
Yeah, you do yours and I'll think about it.
Okay. I also had a hard time. I feel like this is probably why Andy was worried going into this.
This is exactly why I was worried going into this.
And I think a lot of it is that the comparisons between these two movies are a lot closer than some of the comparisons between the other two. So, like, deciding has been a different experience because with some of them it's like, oh, well, they're so different. And with these, like, yes, they're different, but you have the same thing where there's sort of this one character that you're focusing on and you have this whole whole process of like them coming to terms with who they are, and then also like building relationships with others. And you have the relationships between the penguins, which is incredibly sweet and supportive, and you have the relationship between Poe and the other warriors, which is incredibly sweet and supportive and like unbelievably wholesome. And you have two films that do a really great job of being funny but also having emotion, which again, penguins did not expect that from that film, but like it's there. I think that
I do just want to say, please bear in mind that whichever films wins this has to go up against the Prince of Egypt.
True. I was gonna say that I ultimately kind of am inclined to pick Kung Fu Panda, because I think that Poe is a more fleshed out character than Private is, in the fact that he, and again this movie kind of focuses on this, but like he is given a past and then we get to unpack his present, but it's also geared towards how this will impact him in the future. And I think that with Penguins it's more about sort of him proving himself to others, whereas I think with Kung Fu Panda you have him proving himself to himself, which I am more inclined to like, I don't know, I really appreciate that as a focus, because again I think that we spend so much of our time kind of looking externally and trying to find value in like our jobs and our salaries and all of these external things, and to have a film that really focuses on finding peace within yourself is so important and so rare that kind of stands above for me. But also I really did love the Penguins movie, and I thought that the relationship between the Penguins was unbelievably sweet and touching, and that is also a really important thing to show within media. But I thought this was hard, but
I think though the argument could be made just to complicate it a little bit more.
Oh yes, please.
That part of Penguins was about Private proving to himself that he could do it and getting a little bit more confident in his abilities, and that confidence being the thing that I think that not only was he trying to prove his abilities to his brothers, but prove it to himself, which led to him proving it to his brothers.
But it's also like the benefit of having this found family to also be there and support you.
Yeah, and it's I think it's interesting what you said, Nadia, because these movies are so similar in terms of like a character who doesn't believe in himself gets confidence and finds love in his found family by defeating a villain who is trying to go after his found family, and does that by finding confidence in himself and proving it to other people. And so they're so similar that I think it's so hard to choose, because it's just a personal preference thing. It's like, what setting, what characters do you prefer?
Yeah, I do think that the villain in Kung Fu Panda 2 is much more compelling than the villain in Penguins of Madagascar, in terms of like the motivation feeling rooted in something real, in terms of the fear and the intimidation, and in terms of the weight of the consequences of that character's actions.
That's what specifically gets me for Kung Fu Panda 2 on this matchup specifically, is that not only is the setup of the found family and the character who's trying to come to terms with himself very well done in both, but I do feel that the antagonist specifically has a much stronger tie to Poe, has a much more compelling reason to be doing what they are doing, and not only that, but it adds to the world and allows for them to have a Kung Fu Panda 3 that makes sense in this world and plays into the overall trilogy.
I think, though, to give it to Penguins, I think that part of why Penguins is so good is because it's not part of this sort of big grand story. It's sort of an independent experience, and that's why you don't need some kind of big serious villain, and that's why kind of a funny, less developed villain works so well. Having said that, I think I'm gonna choose Kung Fu Panda, but I don't feel 100% on that decision.
But you might have something to say next time we record.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I keep kind of coming back to Penguins and why I have so much love for Penguins is I think because it really did speak to me a lot as a person. And sort of what you were saying, Nadia, is that's the interesting thing about evaluating media, is that you're able to derive purpose and meaning from how you interpret it and your own experiences. And I think Penguins spoke to me a little bit more in terms of just speaking to a lot of my life experiences and the way that I'm kind of feeling about myself right now. And mm-hmm. I think that if that wasn't the case, I think I would think that it's a less strong movie. Or not a less strong movie, but I think I would have an easier time choosing Kung Fu Panda 2. But I also understand that Kung Fu Panda 2 would be able to speak very strongly to somebody. Specifically, Kung Fu Panda 2 message of, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from, it matters what you do. And I can imagine that being really, really powerful for a lot of people.
I heard that in the tone of Cotton Eye Joe.
Oh my god.
I think that Kung Fu Panda, though, overall is a tighter movie in terms of pace and plot and characters. And I think that's why I am more compelled to choose it.
Yeah, and I think that just because you picked this one over Penguins doesn't mean that that like relationship that you felt with Penguins is diminished any less. Because again, like, you can find meaning in things that you wildly do not expect. And that meaning is super important and like doesn't diminish just because you, you know, pick another movie over it or say that, okay, well, this one is better crafted, but I don't know, basically your connection to Penguins is super valid and legit, and I want to honor that because I think Aww. that's super important, and that's why we watch things.
Thank you.
Right, and that's how we grow.
I think
it's super cool that you found that
a lot, because I feel bad because I feel like picking Kung Fu Panda 2 is saying like, well, Penguins is not good, but it's really good.
It's not. No, they're both very good films. Just to confirm, we are all agreeing on Kung Fu Panda 2?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alright, I am locking that in now. Okay. The real reason I was worried about this is because I wrote down on a sheet of paper earlier today that if Penguins of Madagascar somehow won, I would do my darndest to defend it against the Prince of Egypt. And I really didn't want to do that.
Well, that would have put you in a real pickle, huh?
Oh, but I would have done it. I would have committed.
And I would have fought you about that.
Yeah.
I would have run across the entire country and fist fought you about that. You would just see like a plume of dust flying up, and under it would be me, Naruto, running.
And I would just be sitting on the sidelines with some matzo ball soup and dumplings, just enjoying the final countdown.
Well, it sounds like we're wrapping things up.
I thought that Nadia's song meant that it was time to wrap things up. Like, well, Nadia's singing the wrap-up song, so it's time to end.
This is always how it happens.
We have been Animation Meditation. If you enjoyed what you heard today and want to join in our discussion, feel free to reach out to us at AnimedPod on Twitter and Gmail. What else am I supposed to do?
Wow, that was a beautiful sign off. That's pretty much it, Andy.
Yep.
You did it.
All right.
Bye. Well,
wink. Got him.
Oh, I should stop recording, shouldn't I?
Bye, editing, Andy.